to have 500 more spaces. Beds, we want to have this many amount of beds next year, because this portfolio for me needs us to be very practical, because even the way the concerns come to us as members of parliament, yourself as a department, they come in such a way that you end up knowing who some of the students are. You know them. There's like 100 of them. And if it's 100, you know, times 10, times those members who are not even in the committee. So it's a very personal and sensitive portfolio. So I think I really need us to be very succinct in our articulation of where we are, what we've been able to achieve, and what more we can do. When we say expansion, let us be clear on what that expansion looks like in terms of our plans and our budget for this financial year. Funding, that entity on student funding is quintessential. When are you giving us the report? When can we start implementing? Issues of postgraduate funding, we covered a lot of it under DSI, but some of it does also need the DH to articulate on that. The certification issues, what is our plan to make sure that next year is successful? NASPAS, what is our plan? The CETAs. The CETAs are just spending money. NSF, it's giving money to I don't know who. What is our plan as a department to make sure that the CETAs are using service providers who will give our students the requisite skills, or our citizens the requisite skills for them to participate in the economy? DG, we have a crisis of CEOs and chairpersons of CETAs who continuously make this remark that says, no, Chair, you know that we don't train them ourselves. Of course we know that. But you are responsible, that you are giving someone money to go and train on your behalf. You have to be in control of what that person is doing with those funds. Because when society then says to us, we are unskilled, we are unemployed, but we are taking out resources. So we are hoping that this plan, DG, that you are about to present to us is going to cover some of those issues. There are conversations we started as a portfolio committee, for example, with public works. We are hoping that your plan encompasses that, to say, we are going to meet with public works on such and such a day. So we have, you know, we're meeting with whichever department who can strengthen the work that we need to do, because not everything is done by us. There are suggestions the committee has made about municipalities and us having to engage with municipalities to fix the services around our institutions that then have an impact on our institutions. Have we been intentional about ensuring that such a meeting, such an engagement sits and happens? Partnerships, how are we what plan is clearly in place to make sure that we move partnerships? If we say in the TVET program, currently each institution has an estimate of 10 partnerships with industry. How do we shift that target to 20 per TVET college? What is the plan to ensure that that happens? Those are things that for me have been ongoing conversations of the committee. Gender-based violence and femicide. The issue of policies in our TVET colleges. We want to have finalized policies in all TVET colleges by such and such a date, and then we must be able to implement it by such and such a date. That's the type of planning that we need going into this financial year. I don't want us to have a situation where at the end of the presentation we're still asking for consideration of matters that the committee has been for a long time been asking you to. So with that being said, DG, it's 12:15. I think you had about 45 minutes or so. Yeah, 45 minutes to make your presentation. So at 1300, I will then start requesting that police wrap up. Over to you, DJ.
Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Nompendulo Mkatshwa, Member of Parliament, Honorable Members of this very important committee to us, the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, Science and Innovation. To us, it's an honor to be here. A great privilege that is a result of many struggles that led to us to even set foot to Parliament and make our voices heard. And therefore we take this very seriously in this regard. I brought the entire team of our DDGs with me, so I'm not alone. As you can see on my left, my colleagues are with me here. My extreme left, Deputy Director General for the branch, Skills Branch, Mr. Mvalo is here. He is not delegated, he is here himself. Mr. Sam Zungu, the TV Branch Head, is here. DDG for CET Colleges is here with us, Ms. Thembisa Fuchane, and on my left, our CFO, Ms. Pretty Makukule is here with me, and on my right is our Head of Planning. DDG Gasa is here, I can't see her. On my extreme left, DDG Gasa, the DDG for Planning, Policy and Strategy. And next to her, I'm very happy to see DDG Lulama Mbogo is here. She's not well, but she managed to be here. You also can see the women presence in the in the executives, and I'm sure that if you were to look at other departments that come to present, you will see the opposite. So I think it's important. That I make this point. I don't see Dr. Sotriko. There's Dr. Sotriko, the DDG for universities. I think besides, we've got a strong team from both the ministry as well as the Office of the Deputy Minister that are here presenting ourselves to you, a chair of the Portfolio Committee. Mr. Mkiba on my right is our Head of Strategy in the Office of the DG, but otherwise appointed as the Chief Director for Planning Policy and Strategy in the Planning Branch led by DDG Gasa. So at some point, DDG Gasa, I will ask her to make a few remarks regarding the overall strategy, because she's the one with the huge responsibility of oversight over all the branches regarding policy implementation. And I think that is who we are. The Deputy Minister provided a very helpful introduction leading towards this presentation, but also Acting Minister Nwesi, in his remarks, made a number of observations. One of them, which I think I need to acknowledge upfront, is the importance of collaborations across all government departments, pulling together the resources so that we make a bigger impact. I think this is really, really important. May I also indicate that in the team of the DG, the DG's office is also represented by the head of the DG's office, the newly appointed Chief Director in the office of the DG, Ms. Machane, Khabo Machane is here. She has joined the department. Maybe well introduced to the portfolio committee because she's been the head of the DG's office of the Department of Sports, also the head of the DG's office in the Department of Transport. So she brings that experience with us in our office, and I hope that this will help us to consolidate the coordination. But it also strengthens the women leadership in our department. Chair, allow me to start with your comments, because I think if I were to go without that, we might just mislead by presenting, knowing that it's difficult to actually meet the high standards that you've set. Let me acknowledge what we can do and indicate that what we can do, we will do, but maybe not today. The limitations of a presentation of this nature is that it is structured as an MTF kind of template, which actually captures this financial year and the next and the outer years. And so it's not able to capture what we already have done. And if we were to do that, we'll deviate from the presentation. And I think that is the unfortunate thing about today, that we are unable to do so. Lastly, Chair, I trust that when it comes to enrollments, we will make you happy, because we are going to be speaking quite elaborately up around the issue of enrollments, the MTT on student funding, the issues of certification, CETA spending. It's important. We will spend a little bit of time speaking on to expansion of the system, because I think this is the biggest item, the size and shape of the system. We will try to be as practical as possible. In our presentation, we even try to bring pictures just to bring ourselves to being practical about honorable members of the portfolio committee, allow me to also just make other few observations. Firstly, that this kind of a presentation is not an ordinary presentation, because it is a high impact. What we are presenting are high impact indicators, which means we are not presenting on all indicators. For example, those that are process indicators, such as development of frameworks and things like those, we are not necessarily bringing them on board here. So soft issues that are really critical, such as issues that the chair has correctly raised with us around gender-based violence, might not find the expression that you would like to make, but we will endeavor to make a point around it. We are presenting to the portfolio committee 105 indicators that are specifically going to be driving the work that we are going to do in this particular financial year. Taking into account, Chair, that in the past our APP will have between 111 to 120 indicators. The reason for the reduction of high impact indicators is that this is the final year of the administration. Some of those indicators would have already been covered and reported upon in the previous trials. The reason we call these high impact indicators is because they are linked to the National Development Plan, they are linked to the MTSF, they are linked to the ERRP skills strategy and the HRP strategy for the country. And I think that is the point that we wish to make, Chairperson, around our presentation today. The current slide presents the outline of our presentation. I think it would help us that maybe before I speak to this outline, I indicate, Chairperson, that the mandate of our department, the Department of Higher Education and Training, emanates from the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. That is Section 29 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, Act 108 of 1996, that states that education is everyone has a right to education. And then specifically says, everyone has a right to basic education, including adult basic education. And in that regard, you will include parts of community education and training. But what is key, and this relates to the comments by the Honorable Chair, is the issue around further education. The Constitution directs that the state, through reasonable measures, must make further education progressively available and accessible. That is why we have a disjuncture, Chair. Every year the issue of enrollments becomes the issue of discussion. I think South Africans must understand that this is not produced by the Department of Higher Education, but it is produced by the constitutional dispensation. That makes basic education compulsory. Everyone is able to access it, but when you go to higher education, it is only available as the state develops the capacity to do so. This is crucial, and it needs to be understood so that our measures, when every beginning of the year we move around trying to admit learners, trying to intervene, it's not seen as a department that is not planned, that has not planned properly, or that every year it wakes up and then it deals with the enrollment. Every year we do this. No, we are doing so because it's an injunction by our constitution that we must do the best that we can to progressively make higher education available according to the available resources that we have. And therefore, at a later stage when I ask the CFO to present numbers, we will be trying to show the capacity that we have so that the assessment of our progress is understood in the light of the resources at our disposal. That is why we make so much emphasis on governance, on good governance to our institutions, because it's important for us that every cent that is allocated to us, we are able to reap the fruits of ensuring that we improve access. And I think that is the point that I wish to make right at the beginning. Allow me, I'm not going to be too detailed, but allow me at this particular slide to make a point about access. Because at the beginning of this administration, 5 years ago, we said that by the end of this administration, we would have increased participation as a result of expanded opportunities. We said that we will ensure that optimal use of resources in the PSET system is done, and that we will make impact by ensuring that the system shows improved social and economic development, and that we will ensure excellent teaching and learning practices towards quality provisioning, and that we will address education and training needs of individuals, of employers, and society as a whole. That is our commitment at the beginning of this administration. And we are now saying today, Chair, this is what we have done in the last 4 years, and we are now in the last the fifth year, and this is what we are going to do. This is what we are going to deliver. In terms of access, for example, Chair, to PSET opportunities, I'm happy to indicate that in terms of our universities, if you look at our statistics,
from 2018, we had about 260,
thousand young people that entered the system. But this increased to 393,000 in 2019, and 2020, 507,000, and 2021, 538,000. The same applies to TVET colleges, from 200,000 to currently, way above 284,000. And I think as we present, we will be showing what this is about. Allow me, Chair, to as we speak about access and expanded access, to also speak about artisans, because this is one of the issues which, in terms of increasing participation and ensuring that we address education and training needs of individuals, employers, and society, we said we will do. Chair, the target for the MDP is that by 2030 we must have trained 80,000 artisans. I'm happy to say, Chair, in this financial year we would have reached 80,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of the most underreported achievements of our department. In fact, nobody speaks about it. No one talks about the fact that we are striving for 2030 NDP target, but in this particular year, we already have achieved it. And we'll move ahead and we'll set new targets. Let me indicate how we achieved this target. There was one institution that was dedicated for artisan testing in the department in Lela. And the NDP targets were based on the production by Islam. Currently, Chair, we've reduced the numbers. In fact, we've gone down in the number of artisans that we are producing if we are just going to be looking at Inhela graduates. After COVID, we went down to an average of 10,000, about 10,000 artisans. But what we then did, Chairperson, we then said, no, we are going to establish centers of specialization across all our colleges. And in each one of them, there will be a trade testing center. And we will start producing artisans across the country. And right now, we've got 35 additional trade of these centers of specialization. And because of it, Chair, we are going to reach 30,000 this year. And that number, Chair, excludes the numbers that will come from Inlela as our trade center. It also excludes private providers in terms of artisans. So I think we are on track. But the question there is going to be, in which areas are we going to be producing these artisans? That is the quality issue which, as we report to you, we are going to address ourselves to. Improved access and efficiency of the PSET system could also be measured in terms of the number of lecturing staff with PhDs that we have produced. In the last week, we were launching a program that we called NGAP. This program is a program where we said to transform the university sector, we have to identify women, we have to identify black academics and scholars and target them for a period of 6 years so that they are eligible for governance opportunities in our institutions. They are eligible for opportunities in the academia that generally are always outside of the reach of the historically disadvantaged individuals. I'm happy to report that Chairperson have already started producing. This year, 100 of them, have already graduated. And every year from now going forward, 100 is going to be produced by this particular program. It's not my task to go in this direction in terms of my presentation. I thought I must just make that point, Chair. so that we put that matter aside, because your comments were quite strong at the beginning, and I think we have taken note of them, and we trust we'll have an opportunity to come back to you, Chair, to present in these other areas that are not going to be covered for the reasons I've cited. The sector priorities prescribed by the President is important. The President called all DGs in one room and made it very clear that in this last year of the MTF, we must make sure that we are very clear about what it is that we are going to achieve. And as the Department of Higher Education and Training, we have identified the following. One, the change of the size and shape of the PSET system. The chair says, make it clear. Here we are talking about TVET and community education. Here we are saying the numbers into TVET colleges will have to increase. Where are these numbers going to come from? They're going to come from the 3.7 million young people that are sitting outside of the system that we call the not in education, not in employment, not in any form of training. We are going to eat up those numbers into the system, and starting this day, we've already appointed our district directors and our regional managers to lead the campaign for registration of everyone who's not in the system, who's sitting outside of the, for whatever reason, because after that 6 months, we're going to have to place them in our institutions. So that in South Africa there is no one who sits outside of the education and training system because of reasons other than that they themselves are not motivated to do so. But the state will make opportunities available for them to do so. I'm happy to report that we talk about the finalization of the comprehensive student funding model. Again, let us make this clear. Already the report on the ministerial task team in this regard has tabled the report. So we are not going to be developing another report. This is already done. It's work that has been commissioned. It's work that has now been completed. What is now happening is that we are finalizing consultations. Because once we tabled that report to Cabinet, Cabinet directed that it's important to capture the voices of all stakeholders before we finalize on this. Because the implications for the student funding model is not going to be in education alone. The implications is for all government, because the resources for funding education will have to come from somewhere else in the budgets of other government departments. And therefore, it's important to involve as many of our counterparts in government as possible, but also our stakeholders. Are important that their voices is captured in this regard. The establishment of the two new universities, two is the number. May I remind you, Chair, that we have Mpumalanga University, we have Sol Plaatje University. Those are the two new universities that are growing. But they're not just growing in terms of numbers, but in terms of the quality of provisioning by these institutions. If you look at the outputs, the research outputs of the two institutions, they are beginning to show that they are on a trajectory, increasing, So we are saying next year, Chair, we will not only talk about two new universities, but we would have started building the two additional universities on top of those two. And these will be one university at Ekurhuleni, which is going to be University of Science and Innovation, and the second one is going to be the University for Policing, which is going to specialize in crime detection and policy. This, Chair, I am happy to report that the feasibility studies for these two universities has been completed. We are not going to be thinking about building it. The feasibility study is done, which therefore means now what we need to produce in this by the end of this financial year is the designs and the beginning of the actual, you know, rolling out of the infrastructure project. And later on, Chairperson, we will talk about 9 colleges that we are planning to build. You have to look at what we plan to do in the light of what we've already done. Currently, there's 10 college campuses that we've just finished building that are ready to be handed over to communities. And I think this is also one of the most underreported achievements of our department. When we speak about 10, not 10 campuses. There's additional 2 campuses that I have not spoken about, and one is a Giani, you know, a precinct. The other, in Giani again, it is a planned campus for TUT, where the feasibility study has also been completed. So when we speak about expanding the opportunities for the TSET sector, regarding infrastructure, we are presenting to you, Chairperson, the actual evidence of that expanded opportunities that we are providing. But we understand that there is much more that needs to be done, you know, beyond this. Placement of students through funding schemes in collaboration with the NSF, it's important. Here we are targeting young people trained and placed in workplaces. The President committed 10,000 young people in the last State of the Nation's address, and we provided 16,000 in 8 months. We had placed 16,000 Chairperson, you know, 16,000 Chairperson. but we also have learned something, Chair, in that process. We also have learned that we can actually do better than these 10,000 and 20,000. And I think it's important that we make this clear, that we are not working to just achieve the 20,000, which is now a new target. No, 20,000 we will achieve, but that's not the focus. Our focus is to go beyond 100,000, because we have found mechanisms for working with the private sector. I think Mr. Sam Zungu and the team, and Ms. Tebisa Fuchane and the team, organized the summit for CET and the summit for TVET colleges to speak to the, our partners, particularly employers, establishing a stronger, you know, partnership with the private sector. The result of that work is beginning to show, in that we are beginning to see some of the employers, particularly those that are outside of the country globally, beginning to also come to the party. We've just signed an agreement with the Chinese Cultural Center, and they are saying, we've got industries that are waiting for you to give us graduates to absorb. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine the size and shape of that economy. And that agreement, we are also going to be taking advantage of the chairship of South Africa in BRICS to making sure that that agreement is turned into reality. And we hope our president and our minister will then find an opportunity to announce to South Africa the new partnership that is going to actually lead to a new dispensation when it comes to placement of graduates in the system as a result of the of us taking advantage of the, the international conventions that we have signed with other countries and partners. The expansion of access, Chairperson, between now and the end of the outer year 2025-2026, we hope to increase the current expanded access, which is 1.1 million university students, to close to 1.2 million. Now, it's important, Chair, that I say that this year alone, of that 1.1 million university students, 80% are NSFAS funded, and 80% of those are NSFAS funded, and I think it's important that I say so. TVET colleges, also, we are looking at expanding this by the outer year to 640,000, and 469,000, you know, close to 500,000 for CET colleges. That is what we mean by expanded access. This is what we plan to do, and this is what we are beginning to do. In terms of infrastructure, we are able to show, you know, what this this is about. Before I get to NSFAS, I just feel that I need to just make this point around expanded work of the department regarding infrastructure. We will provide honorable members with these details later, because it's not necessarily covered in the presentation, but I'm using it just to show that these you know, commitments are commitments that are real, you know, and I'm not going to spend too much time in this. I just wish to say that we've got 85 public institutions, which include 50 colleges, 9 CET colleges, and 26 universities. But it is important that we take note of the fact that we have 258 private institutions. That includes your private private higher education institutions, as well as the private technical and vocational educations. Regarding the output in terms of our infrastructure, Chairperson, may I indicate that at Umkhumbundlovu TVET College, we have now completed Umsinda. We have now completed Umzimkhulu at SIET. These are new campuses. We have now completed Umthashana at Nongoma. We have completed Kwagqagaz. We have completed in the Eastern Cape, Aliwal North, you know, the new campus for Ikhala TVET College. We've also completed Ingwe TVET College at Ngungushe. And in East Cape Midlands TVET College, Graaf Reinet at Thabazimbi, we've completed this. And we would like to make this information available immediately, just for your additional reading, honorable members, because we are proud of it, and we feel that we can do better than this. This is by no means an indication of now we are doing well. No, this is merely saying, so far this is what we have done. Therefore, our commitment to do more is not based on an ambition. It is based on experience. In building two new universities, in building 10 TVET campuses. So because of that experience, we feel we are confident that what we are committing for this year, it is within the means of the department to do. The CFO will then come later and say it is also within the financial means of the department to do so. I think regarding the increase in artisan learners that are to be trained from 30,000 to, in the outer year, we are looking at 36,000, and that's a very, very conservative figure, 36,000. If you take into account that annually, just Indlela alone produces about 10,000. And so when we say between 30,000 in this particular financial year, and the outer year is 36,000. It is quite conservative. We are clearly, if you look at the what we produce per year, going to exceed 36,000 artisans by 2025-2026, which means by 2030 we would have actually almost halved the increased by half the what was the target for this. Chairperson, I'm not going to go through the rest of the slides because I think it's self-explanatory. You can see when we talk about the increase in learners registered in skills development programs, when we talk about student funding implementation framework, which I think by the end of October, we are putting a time frame, Honorable Mananis. We are saying that by the 31st of October, we will have finalized and submitted the student funding implementation framework. This is a deliverable that is 3 months from now. Is it 3 months or 2.5 months? That is our commitment. We will submit a fee increase regulatory you know, framework by the end of October this year. This is not something that we will do somewhere at the end of the financial year. No, it's going to be done by the 31st of October this year. So in our presentation, we are trying to be as practical as possible in showing exactly when what we say we will do, it shall be done, so that oversight on us is clear in terms of what we should be putting on the table. Planned infrastructure to support expansion, I think I've already elaborated on this one, you know, and I think the only addition that I want to make is that we are going to be building 12 new community learning centers within this year, but within the MTEF. But within this year, we would have started. And what we are committing for this year only, honorable members, we are committing 3 of the 12. And we are saying these are Frinyane in Heidelberg, Gauteng. These are Kwakuka Emalahleni in Mpumalanga. These are Eersterivier in the Western Cape province. This is going to be done this year. By this year, we shall have completed it. But the rest of the 12 total number of community learning centers, we would complete by the end of the financial, the MTF. We will build 8 TVET college campuses over the MTF. I think if you take note of the fact that we've already completed 10, 8 is also conservative. I think Mr. Zungu will agree that we can do better than those 8 campuses, given the fact that we are ambitious with numbers. We are saying that currently TVET College is absorbing less than 600,000 slightly, and we want to move beyond 1 million soon, so that in the next 5 years, we're talking about more than 5 to 10 million young people, which would have turned the system completely the other way around. The shape and size of the system at that point would have been different, completely different. We are going to be building an additional campus Kwa Pambanana at Umfolozi, and as well as Greytown. We will work with DUT to complete the engineering building as part of the Imbali. In this slide, we try to show some of the infrastructure that already has been done, just to whet the appetite. You can see there the Machuba College that has been completed in terms of the renovation there. The satellite campus, the concept designs will finalize. There's 2 new developments in Kiani. Not only are we going to develop concept designs for multi-purpose center in Kiani, but also the campus, for TUT is a commitment that we're making. We will ensure additional 6,000 students participate in work integrated learning, and this is a commitment that we are making. Chair, I think we will skip the few slides after this one because I feel that they are self-explanatory, but if there are questions, we will come back to them. And I think the colleagues, particularly Mr. Zungu and Mr. Mvalo will make additions in those areas. The issue of success and efficiency cannot be discussed without really making reference to quality provisioning. In the system. It is well and good to talk about infrastructure expansion, but the quality that comes out of our institutions, nobody really take it seriously. And therefore, quality issues are really, really important. So in the provisioning of our artisans, we are going to be focusing particularly on scarce skills in those areas. In increasing learners who complete learnerships, we are going to also be focusing on occupations in high demand. We are not just going to be producing increased learnerships, but we are going to be addressing the issue of occupations in high demand. Learners who complete internships will also increase to 11,000 from 6,400, which I think is not an ambitious enough target if you take into account the fact that there are many young people sitting, you know, without these opportunities. I think as a department chair, we will revise this target, because I think it is achievable to do better than this, but I think we have committed 11,000 by the end of the outer year. I have spoken to the NGAP program. We have a figure of 85 additional posts being filled at universities with the graduates of the NGAP program. But obviously, these are not unemployed scholars. They are already working within their own institutions. What we are saying here is that the opportunities available in the system we will prioritize the graduates of the NGAP programs. We will further allocate 40 scholarships or internship positions to universities through the Nurturing Emerging Scholars program annually, but also allocate 40 doctoral scholarships to universities through the University Staff Doctoral Program, and 25 awards to permanent instructional and research staff at universities. I think overall, Chair, we are not speaking here about this Mrs. Obengu program, which seeks to close the gap between the HDIs and your advanced institutions in terms of the inherited legacy. But that is really the most important program for us for transforming the landscape of the higher education sector, over and above the programs that or interventions that we are providing here, which include your NGAP, your internship program, your doctoral scholarships, you know, as well as your research staff, particularly future professors program. We are planning to increase the proportion of university lecturers who hold doctoral degrees from 51% to 55% by the end of the outer year, Chair. I think this is really, really important, you know, and I trust that with additional resources, our programs like your NGAP program could absorb more, so that we produce more than just 100 a year in that program, but you can produce more. But we are trying to be reasonable, operating within the means of the department, but we are definitely going to be engaging Treasury regarding this issue, because I think it is the backbone of the transformation of the system, because we don't want to transform a system by just opening the doors. By the quality that gets out of those doors is not what we want to see. Chair, I think I'm going to conclude by asking the CFO to come forward with the financial information. Now, in the financial information, what we are going to be doing, of course, the responsiveness of the PSET system is important in this regard. Ensuring public TVET colleges implement programs such as your entrepreneurship program, increasing your accredited program, increasing the number of CET college lecturers trained in accredited training programs. And the DDG for CET Chairperson is currently on the road, trying to say these are the programs of choice. We want to make CET, you know, an option to many young people dropping out of basic education, but also those who are already graduates, but they want to enhance their living standards by accessing the quality of education that our CET colleges are providing. The issues of policies are important, and I think we do indicate that these are policies, and I hope the chair will be happy to see that we are also putting dates there. We are not just saying there shall be a policy. We are saying by this date, the 31st of March, there shall be the National Qualifications Framework Amendment Act on the table. And we continue to list other important indicators. Honorable Ngwesi did indicate that we need to work with other government departments to make better impact. Given the opportunity, we would have responded by saying that we are already developing a countrywide master skills plan for which would is for approval by our minister in September this year. And this master skills plan is going to be the basis on which we work with the rest of other government departments in ensuring that we make bigger and better impact in the work that we do. CFO will provide the financial information, and in her input, she will show, for example, that chairperson, the budget for NSFAS continue to increase. The budget for NSFAS currently at 47 billion. We expect this that in the outer year it reaches more than 51 billion. I think when we say this, we are not saying this easily. We are saying this because to us in our minds, it is about access, access, and access, and more access to many South Africans who would not have had this opportunity. Yesterday, we had TEPSA, and we were saying that we TEPSA funds 7,000 students. Today, we are saying we have just paid 1.1 million students in the schooling system this year only. And I think you can actually see from the time we started to the time where we are now that we continue to make you know, access to education a reality to many South Africans who would not have had that opportunity. And as we say so, we are also saying the quality of that is also important. CFO, over to you. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson.
You're giving a good year to one.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson. Good afternoon, Honourable Members, Minister and DM in absentia, DG and colleagues. I will be taking the committee through the medium-term expenditure framework allocation, focusing on the 2023-24 budget, and also to mention that the allocation is linked to the annual performance plan for the 2023-24 financial year. The budget structure of the department hasn't changed. We're still allocating funding, you know, within the six programs, and the information is projected. As projected, I will not go into detail, Chair, in the interest of time. And in terms of the budget trend, our budget has an annual average increase of 4.6% over the MTF period. There are some adjustments in the budget over the MTF cycle, and the net changes to the budget baseline are as follows. In the year one of the MTF, which is the current financial year, we having a 1.8 billion rand decrease, which I will give details shortly. We also have then a 2.7 billion rand increase next financial year, which is in year two of the MTF cycle. And in the outer year, we have a slight increase of 105 million rand. And the baseline decrease, I know when one looks at it, you know, at face value, it might look like there are some budget cuts. Yes, there are, but not the entire decrease is not necessarily because of budget cuts. So the decrease is mainly influenced by three issues. The first issue is that there was a reprioritization of 900 million rand to the Department of Basic Education to support the ECD program. There has been various discussions between the department and National Treasury
and the impact that this could have, you know, on the higher education budget. And how we concluded the issue was that we will reprioritize the budget from the infrastructure of, because this is the funding for infrastructure. Infrastructure from the salt plucky and University of Mpumalanga, but in areas where we were certain that there will be minimal negative impact. But also as higher education, though it's not desirable to reprioritize money out of the vote, we appreciate the fact that it's also in our best interest to have a pipeline, a quality pipeline, if we have ECD program of higher quality. And then the second issue that has influenced the decrease this financial year is the reprioritization of infrastructure funding to CET. DG has mentioned that we are planning to build 9 colleges over the MTF spectrum. Chair and members, I trust that this one in particular also addresses some of your previous concerns, because year in, year out, since you came into office, you have been expressing your concerns around the fact that the CET does not have its own infrastructure, it does not have its own identity. So we have done that reprioritization. It's going to be over a period of 3 years, the 1 billion that we had. It was reduced in 1 year, hence we see the decrease. And to mention that this reprioritization does not change the allocation of the vote over the MTF, but it's funding that was moved from university infrastructure and to support the CET sector. We are really grateful that our discussion with National Treasury to support this reprioritization, you know, yielded positive results, and really we appreciate their support also in this regard. And then the last issue on the issue of baseline decrease is the deferment or the deferral of the infrastructure funding. And members will remember that over time, the department has been reporting slow spending of infrastructure that was attributed to several challenges at the institution. And the department has been working closely with our institutions, and we were able to really realize that in areas where there was slow spending, then the budget and the plans were not in sync. And it wouldn't help us to continue transferring money to institutions whereby we were certain that some projects were not shovel ready. So as a result, we had engaged National Treasury to say in some of the projects, can we then defer the money to the next financial year so that it can be spent when the projects are ready to be implemented. I'm now going to go very quickly. And this last slide shows the overall allocation for the board over the 3 years. And we can see the adjustments that I was talking about, particularly the reduction. Those are the net effects of the reduction. And I will speak about the increase shortly. In terms of the increase, because we also had the increase, we are projecting an increase in our budget. And that is a breakdown of the increase. National Treasury working with SARS has projected that we are going to collect more money for skilled labor. We are excited because this means more learning programs, more placement, etc. And also that we are given additional money to cover the cost of living adjustments. These are salary increases for public servants, including the salaries of our employees for non-sitters, those that get money from the voted fund. Then in terms of the decreases, I've already explained what the figures are. We can see the DBE money, the 900 million, how it's going to move out of the vote. We also see the money that the 1 billion to CET, and also the money that was deferred. If we look at the 1.408 billion, there we have it in red, but if you look it on top, if you look at it on top on the last column, we also have it in black. So it's a net effect of the two. So it's going out of the vote this year, but it's coming back again next year. As I said, the reduction is not necessarily as a result of the budget cut. And then here we are analyzing the projected average spending rate per subsector or per sector. And in terms of the TVET colleges, we see a significant increase in the average funding rate as compared to the previous MTF analysis. And this is mainly because we did reprioritization within the network funding. We have reprioritized more funding that was allocated to universities to the TVET, and this was informed by some of the projections that we worked with NSFAS. And in terms of the CET, CET is gradually moving up as well. We reported 1.8% average increase in the prior MTF, and now we are standing at 2.1. And unlike the TVET and the CET, the university sector is not increasing. Instead, it's declining by 4.3 percentage points when you compare to what we have reported last year. And as I mentioned, the issue of skills levy that we are estimating to see an increase as well. So, Chair and members, we have not forgotten about the ongoing discussion of ensuring equitable distribution of funding within our sector. And I mean, the issue of 1 billion rand reprioritization from university to CET is another example that we are considering the issue. And it's one of many examples. Members will also remember in the prior that there were some reprioritizations that were done to support the CET sector. And the second main bullet also demonstrates the fact that we are supporting, there is funding that also goes to colleges, both CET and TVET, that is from the skills levy. So as much as the voted fund might show lower percentages, but we have seen in the past and also in terms of future plans, the National Skills Fund and as well as all our 21 CETAs supporting these colleges in a significant way. These are just some of the examples. For example, the 10 colleges that DG was talking about that we have just opened, they are part of the 30 new colleges that have been funded by the National Skills Fund. They have invested about 2.8 billion rand. So these are the monies that you're not going to see when we analyze the allocation in the vote. And another example is that over this MTF, the National Skills Fund has allocated 300 million rand for the digital skills to support the community colleges. Another example in terms of the graduate placement that DG was reporting, and he repeated his statement several times, Chair, most of it is being supported by CETAs, and according to the records, just last year alone, all of them, they spent about 300 million rand for this in aggregate, and we're still expecting them to support this initiative this financial year and going forward. So we can give so many examples, but this was just a demonstration, Chair, that as much as we know that we're not yet there in terms of ensuring the equitable distribution of funding, but there are some initiatives that we are putting in place. But also to share with the committee, what we have discussed as management also was that we need to balance between raising or maybe shifting lots of funding to colleges vis-a-vis the capacity of the colleges to manage those funding, because that is also another concern. And the department also need to focus to make sure that their capacity to enhance their internal control, to improve their governance processes, which obviously will help them to make sure that they manage these funds in a cost-effective and cost-efficient manner. And also the implication of that is that there will also be an opportunity for these colleges to crowd in external funding if their governance processes are in place. So those are some of the discussions that we are having as management led by the DG,
but also the issue of blended learning, which came out strongly in the previous discussion with CHE, is something that we are discussing to say in expanding. Perhaps we can't focus on brick and mortar only. It's also important to focus on how we can, you know, expand, you know, so that we can achieve more with less. And these are the analysis, Chair. I'm not going to take long on them, but they are analyzing the growth of our budget. In terms of the nominal terms, our budget is growing consistently over the MTF. But obviously, those adjustments that I spoke about earlier on, it shows some, it shows some fluctuations. For example, it shows like the nominal increase for this year is 2.8, which is lower compared to last year. But when you consider all those adjustments, then it makes sense. And in terms of the, you know, budget being growing in real terms after taking inflation into account, it's growing relatively, and we're not really concerned about the negative growth of 1.9 because we know it's being affected by those infrastructure adjustments. And also the high education spending as a percentage of GDP, it's even in this MTF, is projected to remain constant at 2%. But the interesting analysis was when we looked at the percentage spending on education in its entirety, having to include basic education, we can see the very last line. It shows that the higher education expenditure as a percentage of the total education budget in terms of public spending is just less than 1/3%. It's less than one third of the total higher education budget, which means then the biggest chunk, or the lion's share rather, then it goes to basic education. And there is a correlation between this analysis and the statement that DG gave earlier on in terms of the constitutional mandate of both sectors. And I'm going to move fairly quickly here. Where am I? Okay. All right, so these are the allocation per programs, the six programs we spoke about, and these are the allocations per economic classification. Also, the budget, the structure of the department has not changed because we are a policy department. We are transferring department, over 90% of our budget goes to our institutions. DDA has reminded us that it's five institutions and plus 26 public entities. We also have a very big payroll that we are running. I think it's approximately 30,000 employees that we are paying out of our payroll system. So our payroll or budget for salaries is just less than 10% of our budget. These are the details of the transfers. DG spoke about it earlier on that when we're coming to this slide, we're going to see how the budget of NSFAS has increased over time. We can see if you look at the prior budget, it was at 46 billion, and just within the space of 3 years, it's potentially going to grow to almost 10 billion more than it was in the prior years. And what is interesting about this slide is that when you look at various institutions where we're spending money, there is an increase, gradual increase of the budget over time, except for the universities. So I think it's important to mention that when you look, you analyze the university budget, it has declined this year. I mean, this is your normal different grants that goes to universities. Yes, it doesn't take away the fact that universities are still getting the lion's share, but also we are mindful of the fact that we need to keep on supporting our university sector as well. It's important for them to remain globally competitive. And as much as they are getting the lion's share, there are some funding needs that also need to be taken into consideration to support the university sector. DG mentioned about the feasibility studies of the two new universities, Hammanskraal and Ekurhuleni.
we still need to find funding for constructing those universities. So it's just to strike a balance. How then do we ensure the equitable distribution of funding, but also making sure that each one of our sector is supported in a manner in which they need to be supported. I think I can conclude on this note. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to the DG, Dr. Gopnath Tshishi. Thank you very much to the group of the city. Colleagues, that then is the presentation from the Department of Higher Education and Training on their annual performance plan and their budget. I'd like to note hands from members who would like to ask questions, make comments, and recommendations. Okay, I'll start with Honorable Ngobo, Honorable King, Honorable Sibiya, Honorable Pele, Honorable Kakao, Honorable Mutini, Honorable. On my side, I actually don't have lots of questions for now. I really want to appreciate the first slide 3, where it says increasing participation as a result of expanded opportunities, optimal use of resources in the PTET system. When I look at this slide, I feel like I feel listened to. I feel like what we've been saying as a committee is not falling on deaf ears. I think what we've been saying, that we need to open up. The demand is intense, but we've not only been saying open up, we've been giving some suggestions on how you can expand access. We've been having committee meetings with topics that are specific to assisting us to expand, you know. So I really want to appreciate that. I mean, for example, the meeting we had with Public Works, that was to assist the department in facilitating an engagement on expansion. The discussion on strategic partnerships, it's about expansion. So I really feel that I want to appreciate the department's specific focus on expansion, but also linking it to this issue on optimal use of resources within the PTET system. Not only within the remember DDG Zungu, when we said, when I took your presentation back, DG, on strategic partnerships, because I had gone through it and I said, this is not what we want. We don't want you to tell us that these are all the speakers that you are going to partner with. No. We want a proper plan on strategic partnerships across the PTET system, across government, across from starting within the PTET system, going to even the DSI, other departments, and then, you know, as far as we can then go, even if it's global partnerships. But the whole idea was that we must use what we also have within the system. And by using what we have, we can also contribute to expansion. So I really want to appreciate that slide. I want to emphasize the importance on the conclusion of the work on the MTT, on student funding. We would like to lift the issue of the two new universities, if we can, as a committee, resolve on having a briefing, because DG, my understanding is that the feasibility study for both is now done. Mm-hmm. We had said, don't come brief us on one, brief us on both. Mm-hmm. So it seems like you're finished with the feasibility study, so I would suggest that we resolve as a committee that we receive those, that briefing at a later stage, as a standalone issue. Then the working of the department, the working by the department of public entity. I will not teach you, but there needs to be we need to strengthen the department's oversight role and its role within the accountability ecosystem. You need to work NASFAS into order. You need to work NSF into order. You need to work the CETAs into order before they even come to us. The TVET colleges. So for me, DDG Zoom, we don't want to have governance and management issues within our TVET colleges because then we're not going to be able to do what these plans are speaking to. So we need to tighten the nuts and bolts on that. I don't want to be having the kind of meeting that we had to have as a committee with Buffalo City College, where it was just a, he said, she, it was like we're dealing with kids. We can't have that, right? So that intentionality also needs to come through. The issue of infrastructure, there's a lot of infrastructure development plans that the department has, and we want to appreciate them because it speaks to expansion. But there's something that I'm not seeing. There's a year where the department resolved that it would embark on a capacity building initiative for infrastructure. You said you will capacitate TVET colleges to be able to utilize the infrastructure development funds. And I think it needs to be a standing principle of the department that for all, because it's not only with TVET colleges where you are investing funds on infrastructure, but there's a lot of infrastructure commitments that we've made, or infrastructure development commitments that we've made. And so we need to be very intentional about making sure that we play close oversight on that so that our plans don't fail, right? Because these are great plans and they can't fail. So I think that's it for my... Yeah, then slide 21, the universities, in relation to the agriculture, animal science, and something else, you've explained why the targets for graduations need to go down because the enrollments were fewer, but you don't explain why the enrollments were fewer. So just if we can understand that. And then also want to welcome the increased target for autism development and to also say that can we please not be left out of those graduations. We also want to give young people toolboxes and whatever they need as they go and do their work, because that's an amazing initiative of this department and this government. So Honourable Mawu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have, and thanks to the department for the presentation. I have a few questions under Program 6, Community Education and Training. And the first one is that the department has indicated that it planned to establish student disability unit in TVET colleges. So I just want to understand why are these units being established and how will they assist students with disabilities. I think this is important because, as we all know, persons with disabilities in the country still face a lot of barriers, and so we must do everything we can to try and remove those barriers to make it easy, especially for young people to access education, tertiary education. And the second question is still with regard to the community education and training, but I also it concerns Program 1, where the department says that it is planning to develop and implement safety and security norms, minimum norms and standards for TVET colleges and universities, but the community education and training colleges are not included. So I just want to understand why the CET colleges are not included in the safety and security minimum norms and standards. The last one is budget allocation for goods and services, again for community education and training program. it has decreased by 2.4 million rand, and I just want to understand how will this impact on service delivery within this program. Thank you.
I have quite a few questions, and I'm going to I'll narrow it down to you. Okay. Chair, I wholeheartedly agree with you when you made a statement that we need to strengthen the oversight of the department over its entities. We have seen a huge improvement with Dr. Shishi coming on and trying to have this integration between the departments, and I must commend him for that. But we also need to be mindful when the Auditor General came to us previously, they raised concern on TVET colleges and their role of how to implement the policies. And there was this big disjuncture on the finances where they found themselves into some difficulty with the Auditor General. I just wanted to find out, is there a process already in place to assist TVET colleges with policy implementation and advocacy on the policies of the department specifically to the TVET colleges? I must say, when I was last picketed in front of the department, I did notice that the office where they were currently allocated in Tshwane is really not adequate. So I welcome the fact that they are going to move offices. I just am mindful of the budgets, which is, has not substantially increased for office allocations. And I just wanted to find out, is the department then able to absorb any additional costs for relocation to the CSIR offices? Because we do not want to find themselves in a situation of NSFAS where they pay 1.9 billion rand as rental per month. Then, Chairperson, safety and security minimum norms and standards. I think this is really long overdue, and I'm glad that there is actually a norm and standard set up for it, particularly what happened at UWC last week. But, Chairperson, my concern is that we're rolling out this project at a faster pace at TVET colleges, and I just wanted to find out why at university is it only then going to be properly rolled out next year? Why wasn't this done simultaneously? Because we are seeing the level of crimes in escalating, which makes TVET colleges and universities soft targets to infiltrate, especially when it comes to the safety of our students. I'm just going through. Okay. When it comes to consultants, I see on various programs the department is using a lot of consultants to assist them on achieving some of their mandates and to implement some of their policy directives. I just needed to find out the cost of these consultants in various programs that was highlighted to the department, and is it then sustainable that we keep on the consultants, and what measures are then put in place to ensure that we upskill our own fodder in the department in order to deal with the work which is actually carried out by the various consultants. Chair, when I joined this portfolio in 2021, I know you raised concern on the delay of the promulgation of the National Qualifications Framework Bill. I just want to find out from the department, has there been any engagement with the minister to address this issue with the president? Because it's no use that this bill is still at the presidency. It's not been signed out, yet we are still coming now and talking about the Master Skills Plan, which do not link for me. You have a framework, and now you want to bring a Master Skills Plan to unite all the skills development projects and everything in one to get a proper feel and understanding of the level of skills development required, whereas we have this national qualification framework bill which is just sitting idle. So I just need to find out how far are we in ensuring that this matter is addressed, because there was this issue that there was a second bill that wanted to run simultaneously with the national qualifications framework. Chair, the 900 million rand from the Salt Lake University and the Mpumalanga University to the ECT development of basic education. In as noble as we want to be, Chairperson, I find this very concerning that we could reallocate funding to the Department of Basic Education for ECDs. I would have thought we would have reallocated funding to assist them in the STEM subject enhancement, which would have been better to have increased capacity or increased uptake of those students. Hence, we will see universities had to reprioritize how many students they can have in various TVET colleges when it comes to the engineering fields, ICT fields, because we have not properly invested in ensuring that DBE actually gives higher education the proper students to actually fall into these fields. So that is a bit concerning for me. And also 900 million, we are talking about helping the missing middle. And I like what the minister previously said. These are our nurses, our police officers, our correctional service, our educators. These are the civil servants that are really struggling out there. And 900 million would have actually worked well if we could have looked at how we can reallocate that funding to assist the missing middle students who is not able to qualify for NSFAS or in fact any bursary from every government, from any government institutions. They've been literally left out in the cold. I'm very happy with the CETs getting the 1.1 billion. I would have actually have said give them the whole 2.2 billion rand, because they actually, if you see the level of work that they are going to embark on, it will solve a lot of our challenges in skills development. It will also assist us in terms of those students who now have to go to TVET colleges, who has opportunity to drop out in grade 9 or when they turn 15, whichever, they can now fall in that gap instead of the TVET colleges to upskill those students to move further. So I would have actually loved to have seen the 2.2 billion wholeheartedly go to them this year. But it also then raised concerns when it comes to the infrastructure efficiency grant, that we would take money from universities and reallocate them, which then raised the concern of the capacity of universities to actually administer these grants with the infrastructure. We do know there was a delay in most municipalities with the rezoning. There was issues that has also unfortunately crept in with the construction media. That's why there was this delay, because that is what was told to us. But if we can just be given an idea of, are the universities actually equipped to handle the infrastructure efficiency grants, and what level of communication there has been, especially now with the district development model being so sufficiently rolled out. I'm cutting open a lot of questions. Okay, you did ask on the two universities if we can get a progress report on that, so I'm happy. When it comes to the NSFAS allocation, that is surpassing university subsidies, I think I'm one of the people who raised that. There is a concern for me, because it will then link down where we're already seeing the autonomy and the functions of some of these institutions that will be taken over by NSFAS, which we already saw with the accreditation of student accommodation, because they feel that we are the investors, so we can have a right to take over some of your functions. In as much as we want to be excited to say 80% of students going to getting funding are from the missing, the poor and the working class, we should actually be very mindful that we have higher education institutions and we do not really see much assistance being given to them except them being regulated. So are there any discussions to give some form of assistance to higher education institutions, especially those that are filling the gap when it comes to the critical skills that the country so desperately need? My concern is also when it comes to the missing middle. If we look at the current NSFAS funding model and universities are taking 80% of NSFAS students, it would then mean access to institutions of higher learning for the missing middle is becoming fewer and fewer and fewer. So we are basically saying to a child of a nurse, your mother's tax money is welcome, but unfortunately we cannot really assist you. You have to go to a private institution, and that is a big an injustice to me. We talk about not discrimination, but at the end of the day we are starting to discriminate more and more and more just because your parents could make it a little bit, but they cannot really afford to have you, your sister or your brother at the same institution. So something that I want us to consider in the long run going forward, if that is going to be another ticking time bomb that is going to explode, especially between the missing middle. Chairperson, we've seen that the administration funding for NSFAS has not marginally increased much. So when you see there's no real increment, then we actually need to be very mindful, because NSFAS has indicated this to us, that they cannot afford to upgrade their ICT systems to the full capacity that they actually want to. So I just want to find out from the department what discussions that we have when NSFAS was considering a 1.9 billion rand rental, monthly rental, for an office space which I think they could have received, which they could have received offices with a cheaper monthly rental. Because that to me means I would compromise a proper operational system for office space, which is in most cases, if you walk in there, a luxury. Are we going for the beautification of the office, or are we actually going to look at our mandate and our function? We must also be mindful, if you look over the medium-term framework, strategic framework, we will see NSFAS is increasing at a really exponential rate. The sustainability of NSFAS needs to be seriously addressed. In another 3 or 4 years' time, this government will not be able to afford NSFAS fee-free higher education. We do know that there is a comprehensive funding model that has been, it was due June, now all of a sudden it's due in October. I hope in October we'll actually be able to discuss it and it is not taken back to 2024-2025, because to me that was the most important thing that we should have done, and now we're sitting with a situation where a lot of students were rejected, a lot of their appeals were rejected, because NSFAS must be clear and the department must be clear. In as much as we can afford 1.something million students to go and study for free, we might find out that there were 3 million who actually applied. We might also find out that NSFAS has been funding students who are not basically in the critical skills, so meaning they would be sitting at home or they would just be redundant in the long run. So that is the big concern that we need to maybe have a discussion, a proper discussion on student funding about. The CETAs also have set up their sector skills plans. But you will find that the sector skills plans are not really much aligned to the critical skills in the various sectors. We have seen when the Auditor General just spoke that the service level agreements, the technical indicators are not also aligned to what DHET actually want them to achieve. So from what the Auditor General presented to us, I would like the department to give us a detailed plan on how they actually address the SLAs and the TIDs to be in line with the Department of Higher Education. The post-provisioning norms in TVET colleges, it's in your plans, it says 26 colleges migrated staff onto the PASEL system. So I would just like to know if 26 out of the 50 only grad people on the PASEL system, what is the status then of the other TVET colleges to get most of the staff on the PASEL system? We also note that we have the highest rate when it comes to the need section. I must mention it again, load shedding is not helping much to get them out of that system. So has there been any policies put in place, not policies, processes in place where we can periodically review the national list of occupations in high demand together with the Department of Employment and Labor and the Department of Home Affairs? So I just wanted to find out of that. And then lastly, in 2021-2022, you had 108 litigations, okay? Three of those were only finalized. 105 is still pending. So I would like to know the nature of these litigations and also the cost to the department going forward, Chairperson. Let me just see if I did not skip out something. Okay, the last one that I just mentioned to the CHE is the frustration that we are finding with the misalignments with SAQA, the QCTO, and the department when it comes to certification. I would just like to know how far are we with addressing the backlog of certification and the time frames that it should actually take to issue a certificate, because we will find that we are assisting a lot of students who did their work integrated learning, they've done everything, and yet they 6-7 months later they still have not received their certificate. So I just want to get the time frame. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. Greetings to everyone. I really appreciate the good report presented by UDG Netimbala. You have said something about Quadrigal and Nongo. Yeah, you can see Huti, there is something there, infrastructure development, but I go clean. I have the clean. Oh, it's all my institution. It is not shining, it must shine. Wakiwa, but I the clean, see, this is the world which is corn.
Ah, yeah, that's corn. If you are coming from that road from Ulu, I book right as the rugby clean. But that's she not a good bush in Wednesday. But to auditor general, Naube Kulu.
How will the department mitigate the observation made by the AG? Will the department review the tabled APPs, including those of the entities? It's in time frame. If the department can clarify the reasons for non-compliance with SMART principles in year 2023 or 2024 APP, and it must note that it is recurring from 2022 and 2023 APP. What contributed to this, and how expensive is the non-compliance?
Yabonga,
thank you very much, Chair. My first comment or question is that while there's a substantial increase in the number of students completing universities, what is the percentage of these graduates either in full-time employment or economically active? And has there been an audit of the number of graduates who still remain unemployed? The second one is whether there has been a consideration or a link or partnership of some sort with the PESA and the call center industries, as a large number of young people opt for this career path, and some of the success stories in this is that call centers have been established within townships and communities. Then in respect of the NESA, you know, the sad reality is that the criteria for student funding is being based solely on the income of the household, and it's really not a true reflection of the student or the family's financial situation. And why am I saying that? You find that your parents are working, but they don't own a house, they don't own a vehicle, so they are paying for rent, for services, for transport, for food. And when you look at your income versus your expense, you find that that family is actually struggling to even survive. Or even if they did own a house and they were paying a bond, just in this 1 year, the prime lending and repo rate is almost double the profit. And clearly, they cannot afford that. And so that young person is obviously left without having to get further education or higher education, just because they're a victim of their own circumstance. The last one is that I must applaud you for overachieving 16,000 comparison to the 10,000. But what contributed to this overachievement? Where did you get the budget from, if there was a budget? And can this not be used as a success story to be shared with other departments so that they too can be able to achieve this? Because really that's a huge achievement if we are able to get that number. Other departments should be able to follow suit. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I must say my favorite thing, Jay, about UDG is his ability to brag in the most diplomatic of ways possible. And because it's really refreshing. But for me, what that indicates to me about DG's leadership is that he might be a mild perfectionist, or because he likes things that we are kind of shine, Jay, UDG. So if that is the logic, which is great, I struggle then to understand, Chair, why DG would miss opportunities for his department to consolidate corrective measures on something as fundamental to your core functions, such as the your indicators on the number of CETER employer and strategic partnerships established. How then, given who you are, Jay, as a leader of this department, how is it that your department sits with an indicator that is non-clear on the number of TVET and university students who completed their work integrated learning placements? And there's a lot I could go on. OAG listed a trail list of SLAs that could easily really be absorbed into your functionality and could add to your shine, given that they don't require a lot out of you. So, because sitting here, I want to be able to say that, yes, you are willing to correct, you're willing to grow, you're willing to develop. But if that's something as simple as what's listed here is what hinders your ability to brag more, then it indicates to me that there's a lack of motivation somewhere within the team that you lead. If there isn't a lack of motivation, then there are people who sit under your leadership, DG, that are really not as interested in the vision as they should be, or the people who are just
frankly complacent about the job that they do. And that registers a huge problem for me, because if the vision is not followed by the people you lead, obviously the image of the department is going to be a problem. That automatically trickles to the performance of the department and how it affects the success of the industry, but also the people who depend on the success of this department, i.e. the institutions and the students of this country. So that is something that I really need you to be serious about, DG. And perhaps you are serious and that we don't see it. I don't see it. But I need you to be serious about that, because you are able to even quote conservative figures, because you know you have the capacity, or you know that it is possible, but then they're not there. There's not even a need for you to quote conservative figures, because those figures are not even, they're non-starter figures for the kind of work that you would be able to deliver. So for me, I don't like the idea of us saying, the idea of you being comfortable to present to the committee to say that we have plans, we're able to do X, Y, Z, but even the plans I'm presenting to you are just smaller nyana water. We do have bigger water that we can spray to the crop to deliver more. Because I would want you to really come up with the big guns. And you would be able to do so if you were leading a team that is fully behind you in a way that is necessary for what we were trying to achieve here. So that's just the first thing. The second thing, Chairperson, that I need to touch on is the debacle around Esaid. So there are quite a number of issues that I want to raise, obviously, around qualifications and NSFAS issues, but given that both those entities will be here next week, I will direct my energy then. But now the one thing that I need to touch on before, so that when you come back with SA Qualifications Authority, there's more meat to answer, is there's a whole, I don't like sweeping things under the carpet. Because it's one thing if you try to fix something, you fail, then we can say, let's fix our approach and see how we can succeed. But the sweeping of things under the carpet is an indicator of a lack of interest to solve the problem altogether. It's no secret in this room that qualifications are being sold to people at that institution, where people, I can really just have a chat and call a person and be like, but I need a diploma of don't, and tomorrow I get it. It's been there, it's in the public domain, we know this. And SACA has been approached, your department has been approached, your minister has been approached, and I love how you always make reference to my minister and not the deployed other minister, which is cute. But the silence is deafening. The silence is problematic, and I would need you to give this committee confidence that that has been resolved, because it not only speaks ill to the quality of qualifications that people hold, it poses a risk to the quality of our workforce as a country. It poses a risk to the integrity of the institutions we lead, and we can't want to fight for an expanded access and output within the sector when we have to also deal with criminal elements and mafia elements within the institutions of higher learning. So I need us to deal with that. The other thing, Chairperson, that I want to raise, and DG Sipriqua as well, has to do with institutional funding. Institutional funding has to always be paired with monitoring for where this money goes. And I am very much aware of the autonomy that exists within institutions, that there's only so much we can direct. But umnikazi wesipachi gets to say, uthi imali yakhe yenza. If I'm going to give you money, DG, you must tell me what you're doing with my money. And I should be able to make sure Uguti, the monitoring processes of where my money goes are in favor with what we want. I'm in favor with safety. I'm in favor of having safety within institutions. They're in favor with making sure that students aren't dying, like Honorable King also made reference to, where a student was robbed right outside Res here in the Western Cape now at UWC the other day. And there are millions of other thousands of other cases that exist across the country, Jay. So around where money goes to improve the quality of infrastructure within these institutions. So those are not coming across. It almost seems as if you guys are not strict enough to reprimand institutions. That's in Amasava, actually, these human beings. And I understand that we have problematic principles, like the principle of Ehlanzini, who are just disrespectful human beings altogether. I get it that you do have those kind of human beings. But the bottom line is that we can't be scared of reprimanding heads of institutions or be cute around our approach when South Africa's money is what's funding these institutions. And so we want to be able to see proper monitoring tools. Mm-hmm. And so that you can also come back to us and report to say, but Ehlanzini, they were supposed to fix that terrible accommodation turned classroom infrastructure debacle of theirs, but they're refusing. And then we can also help you on how to do these kind of things. So that's that. And then the last one is just, I don't have the update. There's always a question mark around the norms and standards of student accommodation, not only off campus but on campus. And there's always a question mark around the audits, whether these audits happen, who's responsible for them, and at which institutions they happen, at which institutions do they not happen. So if we can have the updated...
Excuse me,
Chair. So if we can have the updated audits of our student campuses, that would be great. And I'm saying this particularly because, one, the reason why private homeowners or property owners are able to, those who exploit, because it's not all those who do, but those who exploit are able to get as much as they want within the industry, is because they know that their accommodations are attractive. They know that they're cute. Students want to go live there. It's nice altogether in comparison to what universities are able to offer. And so if institutions of higher learning themselves, the standards of accommodation are terrible, then by not being able to force our monitoring and accountability arms on these institutions, we are indirectly forcing students to go seek alternative accommodation, leading them into dangers of having to pay exorbitant funds for accommodation. And most of the people that end up having to go pay these funds are the missing middle. They're the missing middle where parents are in trouble. They have no way to not have their children have accommodation on campus, so they have to cough up those funds, which is unfair. So it's if we can fix the basis of our problems, the roots, then the trickling effects can automatically correct themselves. And that's what we need to see coming from the leadership of the department. And I say this because if, DG, you are able to be given a target of 10, you do 16, with less time given, within less time than what was anticipated, with less resources than what was limited. And these things are not always a matter of money, but a matter of leadership, and a matter of authority, and a matter of proactiveness to ensure these people know who's boss. Who's boss? Particularly, because I know you are able to just say whatever and whatever and whenever you want to say it. And I want to be able to see that happening within institutions on how our money is going to them, and so they should ensure that our institutions are good institutions for students that are comfortable so that we can all graduate happily. But that's that. Thank you, DG. You chair, through you.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by actually appreciating the presentation. And one must say that indeed DG Wabreka and Obreka must be since Senya and Rebatomanako SABC. Whatever, I must hear him saying 1, 2, 3, because I mean, as the portfolio committee, we are able to see what we've been saying, this must happen this way, as Honorable Chair has said. And for me, being here, I could actually pack my bags and say, no, I no longer want to be a member of parliament, because of it. At least you can trace that we have worked within these 4.5 years being here. However, I think, Chairperson, we need to get a program of action per the recommendation of the AG from the department about issues of service level agreement, monitoring APP, performance VC, budget spending. If they can give us in a program of action point form so that we can know and take trace or whatever that they are bringing to us, it is based on SMART principle, because we have actually noted that most of the issues that the AG was raising was that more of their targets, it was just, you know, being ambitious but not based on this SMART principle. So we would want to say to yourselves, it is important that you give us a program of action in terms of how you're going to deal with whatever that needs to be done per the recommendation of the AG. And Chair, I think on this 16,000 placed young people, perhaps let us have a list of those young people, because we have been saying that, you know, it is not nice that you would lobby and advocate for issues, but you cannot touch and feel those particular people. For me, it will be unfair if those 16,000 people, DG, they are from Eastern Cape or KZN only, and I cannot find expression as a person who comes from Gauteng. So can we just get a list so that we are able to see if those that we are representing as these different people from different locations, we are able to identify with. The other thing, Chair, that I think one needs to just advise in this particular portfolio committee is to check the visibility or how this ES presidential database is being used by different entities. Because I don't understand why every time do we have to do a call for applications while you've got a database that we're saying that on daily basis a young person who needs opportunities need to register at that particular database. So there's a disjuncture in terms of that particular database being used or what. So it is important that we note, more especially in this particular PC, so that we can perhaps pilot that when you want a call for internship, learnerships, or bursaries, you go to that particular presidential database. You don't create your own database. That's what I just want to advise, because this is the only space where we even accommodate the 35 and above people that are being seen as if they are on a retired age. So it is important that we use that particular database. And I want to commend Mr. Zungu. I'm very happy about what I'm seeing at West Call, where I'm spaced as the PCO. I was very excited on ability when I was introduced to the deputy principal, who's just, you know, a little bit of my age. And the person is from my locality in terms of the location, you know. This is the person that when I ask about issues such events, when these young people are just, you know, trying to get to know what is happening with their lesson, that particular person will respond immediately. So it is very exciting that at least when we speak, you can hear us, that we want our people to, you know, find expression in this particular opportunity. So I'm very happy about what I'm experiencing now at the West Coast. And as well, I'm happy about their innovation that now they are trying to clean up the new database. They are calling for application in terms of people who are business people to come and re-register so that they are able to give local people opportunity. So, Mr. Zungu, those ones you must give them bonus. They deserve, because at least their service delivery programs, they are positive, impactful to our people. On the issue of national treasury, I think we are noting that there's, you know, processes in place, and you're speaking so positively, and we hope if you feel that there's some hassles, you will be able to write back to the PC and say you need our intervention, because that's what we are for. We cannot just ask, do this, don't do that, and what, and but you cannot even do our part in ensuring that national treasury do focus in the PSET sector. The usage of student enabled program for construction project, DG, I think we need to appreciate that. However, mine is to emphasize the fact that let us use our unemployed graduate and those who are within the TVET system to actually be part of those who will be building those universities. We can't be there, then we are being showed people here, actually a major contract. We subcontracted one that they are, no, it can't be correct. Let us make sure that when we give opportunities as well, that this construction of this particular project, the majority becomes young people. Because if you do so, you're going to make sure that they protect it. Even if they had a mafia interest, chairperson, they would suppress that interest, because of already that project speaks to their socio-economic issues. So it is important that as the department, you need to take a stance without fear or favor to say the most and majority who should benefit there, it should be young people. And then see to it that we include those marginalized and vulnerable. I'm happy, Chair, that I have my partner now, Honorable Ngobo, in terms of issues of accessibility for people with disabilities and CET. So, because of COVID, we're going to work and ensure that we bring CET where we want to see it, being in the landscape in terms of knowledge production. And I think Chairperson DG spoke about one integrated plan approach. I think with this last term that is remaining, that's what we need to push in this PSET sector, to say have an integrated one approach plan that all of you would be able to sing from the same book as a sector, so that we fast track whatever that we want to do. On the issue of the missing middle, I think, Honorable King, one of the things that I think I would share with you out of this particular meeting, those that one have identified or had cases on that are missing middle during the process of appeals for NSFAS, I was advising them in terms of filling in for appeals and everything and complying. And one can tell that those that belong to this particular level of missing middle were attended to, and their kids are going to school and so on. So we need to ensure that this particular thing, it is actually being implemented as a system for intervention, for dealing with the issue of missing class, missing middle. The issue of NSFAS, we'll touch it when we are with them, but DG, we really appreciate the work that has been done. However, more needs to be done. And we hope that with this collective, you will be able to deliver what we are hoping for as the PC. Thank you.
I know, Chair, I'm standing between us and lunch. I actually thought I was not going to speak, but because of some political, no, I know, but because of some political amapiano, I had to raise my hand, Chair. Let's welcome the presentation. Yes, I think maybe let's first and foremost agree with my counterpart next to me. that Moreki decides what is to be eaten. You can be a huge contributor in any system, and you don't decide or have a say of what must happen. And that is where I have a problem. In fact, that is the only part I have a problem with our budget CFO, that we are putting in well in excess of 50 billion. In fact, in the MTF, almost 200 billion that will be putting in the rest of the MTF into the university branch. And the university branch, in essence, says that we can't have a say on how they want to run their affairs. That's generally, that is wrong. And that is why when we had chair last year, that colloquium on institutional autonomy, that's what we spoke about. So I want to agree with the Honorable Khakhao that it just cannot be. On the same breath, NSFAS can contribute, Honorable King, 17 billion on student housing. And we say, no, don't enter. Take spaces at university. It says who? It can be. 17 billion just last year. And we're saying they are wrong if they want to regulate. In fact, Honorable Khakhao is correct. When you go to this student, I'm not sure how many of you do visit this student housing. Some of them, you will not put your kids, or you will not allow your kids, if you can go and visit them. You will not allow your kids. I mean, Chair, was it last year or year before? We went to VUT as this committee. We went to TUT. As when we were at TUT, we said to them, take us to your best residence. They said, no, this one is five-star. They star rated there. When we got there, a mess. A new res that was built recently there had a problem of sanitation. Sanitation was going out through the walls there from third floor. Mm-hmm. So if you're staying in second floor and fourth floor, in Sesotho, that's what they meant, literally, because you slept in sanitation. That's what it meant. Now, this university, they put kids there. Now, you are saying to NSFAS, don't play a role in student accommodation. So you are saying our kids must be put into this system that clearly...
Chairperson, the last time I checked, we were tracing the department, and he's putting words in my mouth which I did not say. So if we are going to have a tit for tat between different party members from different political parties, I think then we will be failing the kids out there that we're talking about if we do not address the department. So I would kindly ask that this be stopped.
Thank you, Honorable King. Honorable, try and address the G and not members.
Did I speak about a person? No, but Chair, this can be. I've never addressed Honorable King.
Okay, Honorable Assemblies. Honorable Lithia and Honorable Members, I said this in two weeks ago. I said we need to save this committee from politicking. I know we're politicians, colleagues, and this is our work. And we have differing views on different issues. And there are many issues we've debated and have different views on them. Honorable King, as you see now, I must be analyzing things. Now, you colleagues want me to start cheering like I'm a chairperson in the house. Save me from this piece. But Honorable King, feels that you are directing the sentiments to her, Honorable Itzie. We have not mentioned her name. I think, Honorable King, let us allow for us to sharpen one another's views. Let us also be cautious, colleagues, of not making each other feel uncomfortable when we express our views in this committee.
I think that's the best way I can try and solve this issue. But granting say Evandla, we have like 10 months left. How many months? Ah, come on. Please, I can't. There's a reason why I'm not a health chair and I'm a committee chair. All right. Thanks. Honorable Chair, please continue.
No, thank you very much, Chair. In fact, the only person I mentioned was Honorable Khakhao, so, you know, I apologize if we have touched people in the studio. It was not the intention, but the intention was Chair. I wanted to emphasize the point of Honorable Khakhao that you can't put so much resources and not have a say. I was making a point that the only part, DG, I have a problem with in our budget is the subsidies that we're giving to the universities. In my view, they are too much, and we're not necessarily getting value for money there. If you look at what, again, Honorable Khakhao spoke about corruptions that continue to happen there. At MUT, there was sex for Max scandals. So it's as if we are funding these institutions for certain individuals in these universities to do wrong things. I mean, if you look at this past Sunday, we woke up to the news that another bodyguard at Fort Hare was driven off the road and died. This bodyguard was a key witness in the murder of the previous bodyguard who was brutally killed. You know, so and at the center of these things, when you look at why are these people willing to kill each other like this? Because some of these resources that we are putting them are told that we must not say anything. So the only problem I have is that we're taking CFO, I've not really calculated, but we're taking a huge chunk, something closer to 50% of the budget to universities. So if we're taking 50 billion out of 108, something closer to 50% that we're taking to the university branch. And in my view, if there's anything that is not sustainable, it's that part. The huge chunk of our budget goes to universities. We have almost literally neglected the TVETs, the CETs, the CETAs we have not. I think they're getting enough, the CETAs as well. So that's my only problem. I think if we listen to DG, AGSA earlier this morning. AGSA is crying about few things. One of them, they spoke about the misalignment between the SLA and your targets. You know, something appears on the SLA, but it's not there on the targets. So there's that misalignment. So my question there, even in your current APP now. That's what the AGSA say. So my question is, how are you going to mitigate that thing? Are you going to revise the APP in order for you to meet the SMART principles they spoke about and the alignment or to deal with the misaligned SLA and APPs? And then on the CETAs, the DG, again that was raised. How are you going to mitigate that? How many CETAs were negatively or are involved in this misalignment of issues? And if there's anything that you are doing in that space, what exactly is it that you are doing? Are you revising APP? Are you allowing the APP to continue, but you are adding or subtracting certain things? So maybe if you can if you can just take us on those issues. The issue of the MTT on student funding. Maybe before I get to that part, let me make this point first. That in the rest of the MTEF, I wrote this down so that I don't take time. Yeah, the MTEF, NSFAS is to receive 153.2 billion this year, next year, and year after, 153 billion. And I think Honorable Mananiso spoke about you bragging properly, CFO. This is what you guys should be doing if you indeed, as the department, want to brag properly. 153.2 billion rand over 3 years, this year, next year, and the end of the MTS. 153 billion. Okay. Maybe you go to 2017, when the 1st of April, the budget there was less than 5 billion that was given to NSFAS. So you when you want to break properly the department, you say in less than 6 years, NSFAS would have moved from point A to point B with so much increase. But also you must quantify it, because here we're talking about poor and the working class students, people who were academic, who were financially excluded by these universities because we could not raise money to fund, to register at an institution. So you go and say, this is what it has meant for a Teboho from a Kutsong township. This is what it has meant. Or for a Karabo from Bethlehem. This is what it has meant to this child. So you put names into this thing so that it's not as if you're talking about numbers, but you're talking about individuals and how it has affected them. But that's why you must brag about. So, and this 153.2 billion is about 94% CEO of the total entity's expenditures. 94% that goes to bursaries for poor students. 94%, 153.2 billion. The total estimate is 163.7 actually. So this 153 billion is only goes to bazaaries. So we're literally taking, I mean, I don't know how many students is that. If we were to give it to all first years, how many will it mean? How many students are we taking into varsity? How many are we feeding? How many are we paying for the accommodation? More charge them more 9,000 per month. How many are we paying? You know, so that's where we must. So, but in this pilot, so I'm giving you a number so that you can go and break properly. In the MTF, you would have funded 1.1 million 300,000 students only on the university space, and on the TVET space, you would have funded 1,200,000. So a total of 2,500,000, 2.5 million children would have been taken and then been given. So if you want to brag, let's brag about those things. Chair, there's something again that keeps popping up. You know, that this thing is not sustainable. Maybe it's not, DG. Maybe it's not. But what is sustainable? Maybe if we can be given suggestions. Because what it means here is that we are saying funding these poor students is not sustainable. This 2.5 million over the MTF is not sustainable. So we must think about other ways. maybe let's get them, like the Hair Commission suggested, let's go to the banks and let the banks give them, or let these kids give guarantees. What guarantees when I come from a shack? Which bank will take that? When I come from an informal settlement. So what does that mean? If you want us to go into that route, you are saying those who don't have anything must not be funded. Again, tactical exclusion of our people. So we can't afford. So maybe if we can get a suggestion. So we must continue to fund these poor kids who can't afford. Chair, this I want to congratulate the department. I do believe that I want to agree with the AG that certain targets might not be measurable. But I want to agree with the budget. The budget indeed is pro poor. This budget, song of the year. And like I said, when I look at this budget, it's like I can just open iCloud Music here and play sad. It's very nice. The song of the year. So I want to congratulate the department for putting together a budget or an APP with a budget that clearly is proper. I mean, after next year, that year alone, NSFAS will be getting almost 53 billion in 1 year. 53 billion rands at Mamorim. Here we are not joking. This year, it's 47 billion, Honorable Kaka, 47 billion. In 5 years, we have moved from less than 5 to almost 50. This is what it means. We have times this by 500%. It's too much. If you want to go and break, are the challenges at NSFAS, of course, and we'll be dealing with them next week. And lastly, Chairperson, when I spoke about the political mapiano, I was saying, Chair, you know, mapiano is this thing that plays all the time. And you open radio, people touch them, Metro FM, Lala Mapiano, Leana, these days. So everybody, something that plays all the time. So I was saying political Mapiano because it can be chaired that. Okay, recently, now we've done it 3 times. We've called NSFAS and said, NSFAS, come and explain this thing of your building. NSFAS came 3 times now, we've done it with them because they've done it once. We felt we're satisfied. Honorable Holomisa released some letter and we felt, no, NSFAS, can you explain now the allegations? They again explained the processes. But where every time when NSFAS is not yet, want to play political, you know, arena, want to assume the responsibilities of making people dance, of being DJs, and it can be. Because if you are not satisfied with the answers, which in the committee, no one said DJ, so of course I got DJ, my piano, yeah, DJ. No one, DJ, rose and said, no, and as far as we hear your answers, we're not satisfied. And in the committee, all of us said, oh, now we understand. So you went on tender, okay. Give us, and they've given us, or we advertised on this day, these are the 8 companies. I even know them by head now. So there were 8 companies that applied, and this is the one that went and met the technical specifications, and this is the ones that went for evaluations and all of those things. But every time, and I think it's a political expedience, and it must stop. I will not, Chair, stop responding to political expediency because it's just that. It can be that, especially when people who have called them and as this committee. I mean, I was one of those who said, hey, NSFAS must come and explain these things. These are new allegations related to what they responded to us, but they were not as detailed as these allegations. Let them come and respond. And they've done that in the committee, not in a corner. They've done that in the committee, and we said we're satisfied. Now we are now saying the DG must respond to that thing. Was this sustainable? Could we not have taken a check somewhere and pay less? It can be. And we're putting the department in a corner, and I think it's our responsibility, Chair, to also protect them as much as it's our responsibility to make them account, the department, from being attacked by ourselves. It just cannot be. I think other questions, Chair, I'm going to leave them. I think let me just end there before I go back on student accommodation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much to all members. DG and the team, we're going to ask that you respond to these questions, comments, and recommendations in writing. But I have to emphasize something. These responses have to be backed back to us by Monday. It can't even be 7 working days. Because this report, remember, now, Aksuma Minisla, your report that we must table before Parliament. Because it deals with something as big as a budget. So we cannot have a situation where those responses are not with us by Monday. And I saw you, DG, who balapants in Mbunimba. So there should not be a question that is not responded to. Because when it's bad. So I am really hoping that we can assist one another in making sure that we are Sarah in the responses. If there are questions that will, when we get the responses, members, we'll immediately have them sent to yourself so that you can check them. And please, members, you have to check those responses. I know sometimes I'm not minutes, they can say, hey, it's James, no King, but I then we're fine, you know. No, with this, we really need to all make sure we read those replies from the department, so that if there's anything we have left out, we afford the department an opportunity as well to clarify that. There's generally an appreciation, DG, for the presentation that you have brought before us today. What I'm also picking up is that we are a family that spends a lot of time together. The conversations we're having are not new conversations.
Yeah.
It is very indicative of the fact that we are in our fifth year. We're four and something years now. No, we're in May. By 20 something May, it will be five. It will be only 4 years. Yeah. So thank you. So it and it shows because we as members make their comments. They're saying that they're not starting from MOM. They are bringing the matter from progress that has been made and saying, how about to make sure that our plans include X, Y, and Z. There have been a lot of clarity-seeking questions, or a lot of questions that have come from different members, and I hope you've noted them. A lot came from Honorable Mwabo, where Honorable Mananiso has covered. A lot came from Honorable King. Mam Sibiya also had those clarity-seeking questions and recommendations. Honorable Pillay also just really re-emphasizing why it's important for us to conclude our work on the ministerial task team on student funding, because we're hoping it will respond to the issue of the missing middle. Honorable Hakao also emphasizing, I think there's also an appreciation of the work you're doing by members saying, look, you need to speak, you need to brag, not only to us, but you need to tell society what you're doing, what you've done, and how you seek to better it. Because what we then do is that we go on a spree in January, February, trying to make ourselves, like, you know, now we're speaking.
Yes, we've been doing so much work this whole time. So we need to really strengthen our communication, not only for events. Sometimes our comms is very events-based. You know, I don't know who deals with communication. Yeah, I don't know which branch or program, administration, where communication finds itself. But we can't only be speaking about comms for an event. When we launch something, when minister goes somewhere, where DM goes somewhere, we have to have communication that speaks to the behind-the-scenes work that not the people don't always see. We can't wait for a launch of these buildings that you're speaking about, DG, for society to know that we're working on that. There needs to be infographics that go out, no matter me and DG. So, these are the things that we are doing. So I think there's an appreciation from all members on the work that you're doing. With clarity-seeking questions that came from Honorable Lizzie and other members that speak to some of the questions or concerns that came from the AG, that we also are then inheriting from the AG. And I really think I want to also emphasize this issue of the budget. So if we're saying ikhona imali esengenayo la ekhaya, we have this progressive budget, and people need to feel it, which also means that we need to tighten the nuts and bolts in terms of the management of those funds. It means we can't have a scandal like we had with the NSA. It means we have to ensure that our teachers are giving funds to people that we know. And how do we increase the department's capability to ensure that what a similar incident to what happened at NSF doesn't happen everywhere else? Honorable Lizier always says he wants to know, and Honorable Manani, so he wants to know who the service provider is, their address, etc., so that he can go and do his oversight there. But it needs to start with the department. Who happened, your DG, on random days with, you know, whoever else, DG Mbali? Who happened, your Teleg somewhere? Unexpected, without the CETA itself knowing that that is where you're going. Because we can't have that embarrassment where we are celebrating a progressive budget, but people are doing something else with that budget. So we need to also make sure that there are systems in place in our TVET colleges. I know DDG Zoom, there are programs that are being rolled out on strengthening the financial management capacities of TVET colleges. But we need to see the results of that coming into the BRRR process. So when you come back to report to us, we need to have seen the intervention of that financial management capacity, and generally in the performance of our TVET colleges. There have been issues in relation to policy that have been raised. The issue of public colleges, DG, I think it's something you also need to maybe respond to. These public colleges, like the Nelson colleges, the agriculture colleges, it was a discussion we were having with CHE, but I think the department can come in the responses to just provide clarity in that sense. There's also another theme that comes up through the led more specifically through the AG and Minister Ngesi was also speaking to it, right? And it also can speak to what we raised here on coordination of efforts. But you also need data to coordinate efforts. And one of the greatest disjunctions we have with NASFAS and our institution is data. NASFAS says, no, we sent the money. The institution says, no, NASFAS didn't. NASFAS says, no, we didn't. We don't know who to fund. The institution says, no, we sent you the list of who you must fund. For a good couple of weeks at the beginning of this year, we had that back and forth. Even students, like students will tell you, would say, no, Tina, today we would have met with NASFAS. And NASFAS says, no, we're waiting for data from this institution. tomorrow the SRC or SASC or DASO from that institution says to you, no, the institution is still saying NSFAS, they've sent the list to NSFAS. So that back and forth police doesn't assist us. So we have a data management crisis. I don't know what you like to call it again. But there's no coherence and coordination of the data within the sector, and that also stifles the work we're supposed to do. So yes, as we speak about coordination of resources, as we speak about coordination of effort, different departments working together, yes, but that also needs data that needs to be better integrated. Even for reporting purposes, sometimes you come and give us a quarterly report here at DG, Uti, you don't have certain information because some institutions didn't send you the information. And they also need to, I know you can't put it in your plans here, some of these things we want you to focus on, but the relationship that the department has with USAF. USAF is not assisting us. It's not. You know, what is this thing called? SACPO. SACPO. I think Didi Chizumu, when we look at the relationship of SACPO and the department, it looks healthy. It looks like there's a supportive, you know, they try and help you. That's what we see from afar. But USAF is working against the department most of the time. They're really pulling us back. So what becomes the strategic planning around working, the cooperative governance that must take place with such an institution or such an entity in order for us, for all these plans to find fruition. Not so long ago we were being told DG that they're not going to go and do research on the student accommodation issue. So who must do the research? Because ultimately if we're saying we're one differentiated whole, it means we're accepting that we are one and we have different responsibilities, and how do we assist one another? What becomes the thinking and planning of the department in overcoming such hurdles that become a hindrance to us achieving this plan that we have? So those are some of the issues that have been raised, the issue of the CETAs, deliberacy and transformation, planning for expansion, planning for postgrad, successful infrastructure. I also then want to say to members, it might be inevitable, clearly, for me to continue with this Kumbaya committee that I've had for 2 and something years, because we are in a political terrain. And it's unfortunate Honorable Nizi is out. I'm actually going to leave this remark for when he returns. So I'm going to hand over to you, DG, to just acknowledge the Mpawe Sukupawona and to make a commitment to ensuring that by Monday we have these written responses. When I think of it like this, you would have had to all respond, DG, so quick right now. Now we're giving you a little bit of time to put your thoughts together and give us something concrete. So please, if I can just afford you an opportunity, DG, to acknowledge the comments and questions from members, and then just make that commitment on Monday.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity. May I take this opportunity on behalf of the department to welcome the generosity of the committee to share its wisdom with us. Very clear and direct, matters were raised with us, and the request that by Monday we present responses in writing. Chair, may I commit the department to that, and thank you for your leadership and your guidance of the department. We commit to looking very carefully at the matters that were raised with us, not just to respond to the questions, but to really critically assess our standing and our approach on some of the matters that are very specifically raised with us today. We appreciate this, and I think we
we look forward to a point when you see the results, and we don't have to report ourselves, because the evidence is there in the communities we are serving, the evidence is there in the institutions we are leading. We take particular note of the quality of the oversight of the department on its institutions, particularly when it comes to the resources that we allocate to the institutions. In this regard, utilizing the AG as an instrument to holding institutions accountable, tracking the matters. I must say, Chair, that I am particularly impressed by the AG's approach to their oversight responsibility. In the past, we used to argue with the AG on the basis that AG is not looking at the whole issue of the impact of our policies. Right now, the AG is over and above the GRAP compliance and other, you know, standards that they expect of us. They are going to be looking at the impact. This is going to really, really improve service delivery. I think as a department, we will cooperate with the AG in working towards ensuring that we achieve the responsibilities that we are fortunate to be given as civil servants. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much to all the DG and to all colleagues representing the Department of Higher Education and Training and those representing the ministry as well. I want to say this, colleague, that we work very well as a committee. I've had absolute pleasure chairing this committee. And it's inevitable for us to differ in perspective, because we have different manifestos, different policies of our parties. What I want to implore us is to remember that our policies will differ, and therefore we will also use this space as a lobby space for us to lobby one another on our different policies. And we've been doing that. Honorable Boshoff is not here, but he's consistent on his view that we must invest in innovation so that we can transform. Whereas there's a view that no, we must transform. We must invest in transformation so that we can have transformed innovation, you know. Honorable King, the DA, is very consistent on how it articulates the posture of NASFAS, how it articulates its posture on NASFAS, how it articulates its posture on the student accommodation issue. We agree, but not so much. Whereas Honorable Boshoff, for the IFP, he says student accommodation must have a cap. And, you know, but we've always managed a way, colleagues, or managed to express ourselves in a way that is respectful and that does not make the other feel that they cannot express themselves in. But ultimately we disagree. And we even all know, I mean, if I sit down and make a list of our different positions on issues, I think I'll be able to categorize them quite well according to different parties. But I also want us to be honest in our engagements. Let's be honest in our engagements. We know the truth about things, that the work that the department has done. I only expect Honorable Noble and Honorable Pele. When now some things I can't pardon you anymore, because you would know. Also, so let's be honest with one another. You know, let's be honest with positions that we've taken. Honorable Makesi is not here anymore. But Nekimu Kalame Laga, the Kiko Kalame to Kuda. Yeah. To say, but you know that. No, but that's not the position of the committee chair. You can't say it's the position of the committee. I said, no, it is, because the majority of the members in the committee said this. Yes, you and your party didn't agree to it, but the majority of the members in the committee said this. It's democracy. colleagues, unfortunately. So let's also be honest with ourselves in how we engage. I am not a health chairperson. I don't have to deal with all the noise that the health chairpersons deal with. So please let us find ways of ensuring that our engagements are amicable. DG, and he accepts the apology. I heard the commitment from the DM himself, so we expect to see them on Wednesday. But that being said, there's a little bit of a snack outside. Thank you so much, Kenny, for your time. We'll see you next week.